Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton sheets from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with sheets that feel breathable to sleep in. You'll experience the purest softness on night one and feel your sheets get even softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. This week, it's all about buy five and get five free when you buy 10 mix and match participating items. Here are just a few. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Pepsi, or Smartwater beverages of various sizes. 16-count fresh baked cookies and pint-sized Ben & Jerry's ice cream, as well as 6 mega or 12 double rolls of Signature Select soft and strong bath tissue and 6 rolls of Brightly paper towels selected varieties. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
The NTSB just had a news conference, going to have the very latest on that. And then we have a retired pilot who's going to join us, Alan Campbell, who has written a book called My Life Above the Clouds, has flown in dozens of times to that airport. And we'll have some insight from him coming up. Still a lot of questions that we don't know the answer to. I have some interesting audio that I have not shared from Jamie Reed, who was the whistleblower at Washington U and Children's Hospital that I'll get to. And then we're going to talk about paddle a little bit later. Pickleball is huge across this country.
Well, oh, yeah.
Paddle is a game that's really been taking off in Australia and in Europe. And Cliff Marsland, you'll like this because Cliff is the director of rackets and he's an assistant GM at this place called Paddle and Pickle. But he's also got an Australian accent. So he's automatically cool just with the accent, right?
I already love it.
It does, I told him that when I met him. I'm like, Cliff, it doesn't even matter what you say because people just be enamored by the accent, right?
That's right.
It's kind of like listening to Dave Murray, the sultry, dulcet tones of Dave Murray.
Yeah, that's right.
I feel bad because
if only I had an accent.
We always call you into service when things are disastrous here. And by the way, we still do have some ice and snow despite all the rain yesterday on the ground. But we got a really nice stretch of weather coming up, don't we?
We do. Before we get to that, though, what is paddle?
Thank you. That's what we're going to find out.
We are, but here's the best way, and I saw the courts. So it's a combination of pickleball, racquetball, squash, and tennis, and you can play the ball off the walls. That's what makes it different, but the court is smaller like pickleball, and that's basically all I know because I saw these courts a few weeks ago. I don't know a whole lot about it.
Are they raised courts? Are they off the ground?
No. I don't think so.
I've
seen
what you're talking about, Dave, because that's another thing.
Tennis.
Yes. Yeah. There's something else that's like that.
Oh, they're going to keep inventing these games.
All I can tell you, this is not a sales point at all, but the orthopedic surgeons that I know love pickleball because it has increased their business big time.
Well, I was on the IR earlier this week with a back injury myself, so I believe that wholeheartedly. All right, what are we looking at weather-wise here, not only the weekend but into next week, Dave?
Yeah, it's kind of a 50-50 weekend as far as temperatures. The whole weekend looks. Except it's a little chilly tomorrow.
Uh-oh, we're losing him. Hang on one second. Let's see if this clears up. We may have to have you repeat that last 20 seconds. Everything was fine until then. All right, let's try again. Dave, you there?
All right, how's that?
Yeah, try it again.
Okay, you know, Saturday is chilly. Let's just go with that. Sunday, a chilly start, but it is winter. Beautiful Sunday afternoon. 64 degrees. That's the warmest we've been since the middle of December. Still nice on Monday. Next shot of rain, and it's an all-rain situation. Developing on Wednesday night and into Thursday. So there's no big cold in sight. There's no snow. There's no ice in sight.
Okay. Well, you know what? Sue, what do you think?
It's not good.
Dave, we may have to let you go. It's just not working. I heard most of that.
Yeah, I did.
Forecast,
I got most of it.
But unfortunately,
Dave, if you're still there, I met a big fan of yours today at Roland Collision on Kings Highway. They fixed my car, and they're awesome. But they wanted to say they listened to the Dave Murray, and they want to know when you're on with the what the season will be forecast because they only trust you.
Oh, all right. There we go. You got an answer to that?
Oh. Mm-hmm. Well, let's see. The next one will be spring. And that will be some in late February.
Okay. All right.
We'll look forward to that. You're cutting in a little bit in and out, so we'll let you go. But, Dave, thank you so much for the forecast. Basically, what he said is Sunday is going to be really nice in the afternoon.
Wow.
And tomorrow, just a little chilly. And next week, the beginning of next week, looks pretty good as well. So I still have, you know, a fair amount of snow and ice on some parts of my house. And you can tell where the sun's getting to it and where it's not. So it was – we got a lot of rain yesterday, though, but that stuff is still hanging out there. All right. So one thing that I want to point out before we get to some things related to the crash is – And I didn't talk about this on the roundtable, but the Post-Dispatch has since written a piece about this that's posted online. So the rumor was, and a lot of people were getting messages, ICE is cracking down locally on a lot of this stuff, right? They're conducting raids. Well, there's partial truth to that. They're not conducting raids. So what happened was, is at the El Magway restaurant that is in O'Fallon, which I think is right off I-70, if I'm not mistaken. I think you can see it there, but there's maybe multiple locations. Police were called for a drug raid is what I'm told. And then immigration officers detained some of the workers because of, you know, questions about citizenship. So they were there not to raid El Magway for, you know, illegal migrants. They were there for some other reason. But when you come across people, maybe this is the difference in law enforcement. When you come across people who are not documented, who are illegal, they're going to do something about it. So that's what happened. So you're going to see a lot of this panic out there, what's happening with ICE. But you should know that that's what's happening. All right. On the crash front, the NTSB just held a news conference.
We know that there was a significant incident in which the two aircraft collided. A pretty significant fireball. If you will recall, even after the first day, we only had maybe one or two grainy images that were coming out. We're seeing more and more at this time. So we're still collecting data, but we are not going to opine until we see a lot of other things.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of different video, and it's even more horrifying because you can see how much time that helicopter was heading right toward that airplane. On the questions of staffing.
The FAA has had a very robust plan in looking at staffing. Obviously, we'll be looking at not only staffing that day, but progressively staffing. How many people, what job functions they were doing, were they being combined, were they not? What was the weather outside? What was the number of landings? I recall back during COVID, one runway was being used, runway one, that was the only one. 33, as traffic came back, started being opened up. So we would look at changes in traffic patterns, construction at the airport, all of that. It all paints a very big picture.
So they also talked about some of the cockpit recordings. Now, they have the black boxes, which is good.
We've received a lot of different information on ATC, and so I'm going to I'm just going to preempt it. Off-the-shelf software programs are not always as accurate as the data we specifically get from ADS-B, from the black boxes. All of that are factors that come into our investigation. So we will not speculate about ATC tapes that you may have heard and seen online or snippets. We are getting the full cooperation that we need to be able to make an accurate assessment and to make sure what we are saying is factual and that it will help and aid in the entire investigation.
Well, that poor guy was nervous as hell, right? You could hear it in his voice. He was not handling that moment very well. A lot of questions. So some of this stuff needs to be defined a little bit. We have Lieutenant Colonel Alan Bullitt Campbell, U.S. Air Force, retired. He was an airplane captain with Delta for 37 years. He's written a book called My Life Above the Clouds. Lieutenant Campbell, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing well. These interviews are a little bit depressing. It's a sad situation, but otherwise I'm doing well.
It's awful. You know, the thing that I can't get away from, and maybe this is the wrong place to focus right now, these people who have to dive into that river and recover these bodies, and you go home on the weekend, and that's what you're left with. And the families, all the devastation, it's just awful.
Well, there's so much we don't know, and that's one of the best examples of it is the people that have to deal with that. That water is cold. They're in the water. Even if you're just on the boat, it's still a very cold place. And then today it was supposed to be rainy.
Yeah. Hey, let's go through some of the definitions. When they're talking about the ATC tapes, can you help us with that? What do they mean by that?
Well, pretty much everything's on a tape. All the conversations, that sort of thing, so that if there's an accident, they can go back on the tapes and said, okay, who said what? When did they say it? What was the timing? So I think that's just a standard operation. You know, everything on the airplane is taped, and then everything with air traffic control is also taped. So that gives them an awful lot of evidence to look at to try to put this puzzle back together.
So what do you think happened here? What's your best explanation? Obviously, there's still a lot of questions that need to be answered, but what's your impression? We've seen a lot of the videos that have emerged in the last couple of days, different viewpoints. What are your thoughts?
Well, my thought is that American Airlines was asked to use a different runway, which is just efficient. There's no problem with that. Runway 33, he has to go up the Potomac a little further. He has to go a little bit more to the east to make that left turn. But everything looked fine to me in that perspective. The problem was with the Black Hawk, they were supposed to be going down the other east edge of the Potomac River, and they were supposed to be down at 200 feet. Had they been there, we wouldn't even be talking about this. That they were further into the body of water, a little bit west, and that they were higher, almost 400 feet, that's unexplainable. That should have never happened. They should have not been there. So that's the big puzzle that they're going to have to put together is why were they there?
Mm. Let me read this. I've been all over X, formerly Twitter, and a couple of people have asked questions, and they asked pilots to weigh in. And this was a Black Hawk guy who claimed to be a Black Hawk pilot. So this is what he said. I'll describe to you what I think happened. Imagine you're looking, or not what happened, but how, a pilot might react to some of the things. He goes, imagine you're looking at the world through toilet paper tubes, and everything is just different shades of green and black with stars and ground lights hard to differentiate and aircraft lights that look the same as those. Then you have three different radio frequencies going off in your ears. Then you're trying to navigate without any peripheral vision. Then you're trying to keep the aircraft under control, and you're trying to keep watch for all traffic, not just one plane, because there are several in the sky at once, and you're trying to mentally keep track of all of them. And you get distracted for like 5 seconds, or your focus goes elsewhere. And like you, your instructor pilot asks you a question about airspace regulations. Boom, you're all dead. Flying those machines is really tough, and the airspace and the NVGs make it a heck of a lot tougher. Is that a pretty good analysis from a Black Hawk?
I think that was a very good analysis. That just tells you the story that only he would understand. The rest of us really don't understand that. But then when you add to it that they were wearing night vision goggles, why in the world are they doing that? If you're out in off down the road somewhere, then you put on the night vision goggles and you do your training. But when you're going by Ronald Reagan Airport down the Potomac River, you shouldn't have had those things on. There's lights everywhere. It's not a darkness situation. You're not in combat. So that's going to be the huge explanation is, were they wearing them? Were both pilots wearing them? And then why were they wearing them?
Did you see the staffing shortages are real, and there's been reporting about the New York Times, Washington Post, and elsewhere. And I did see something earlier that said that they typically maybe make an adjustment after 9:30 because there's not as much traffic at the airport, but that a supervisor made a call in this instance, allegedly, to combine some of the efforts with the air traffic controllers earlier than 9:30. Do you know anything about that?
No, I really don't. They've got their own rules and work schedule and things like that. I understood that there were supposed to be two controllers, but one controller needs to go to the restroom, or he's going to go get coffee, or it's time for him to go eat. Then they probably do a little temporary one-on, one-off. But I just did read something on the news that said one of them had asked to leave early, and therefore apparently did leave early.
Right. Yeah, that was what some of the reporting in the Washington Post was. Do you think that, not that they could have done anything, but do you think that the pilots of the airplane saw the chopper at all?
Well, that's something that a lot of people don't really understand, but those commercial airplanes have that warning system in them on their little displays up in front, and it shows all the traffic around them, which comes through the transponders. And so they'll know if an airplane is over to their right, it'll tell them the altitude, 500 above you or whatever, but it'll be just really quiet because it's not a threat. If it becomes a threat, then it'll go yellow, and it'll just pop up and give them more attention, but it might have an altitude difference or whatever. If it's going to be a problem, then it'll go red, and it'll actually talk to them. It'll say, pull up or go down or whatever, and it'll give them instruction. It's just a recommendation. It's not a force. But then when you consider that airplane is gear down, flaps down, speed slow, 300, 400 feet above the ground, it doesn't have that many options.
Right.
It can only go left and maybe up, but at that speed, it couldn't do either one aggressively. So if it had a symbol of an immediate collision potential, there's just not a whole lot it could have done.
The other thing we're learning here, and this is what makes things even more frustrating is that they had a near miss at that airport.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Nick's, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's Breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
The day before.
Exactly. And that's, of course, that's coming right out on the news. There were a couple of different airplanes that did go-arounds because of helicopter interference. And they just showed something on news a few minutes ago. A guy was in an airplane, a passenger, and he was doing a video out the window. And he showed the two helicopters going right along the east side of the Potomac River in formation. So that's exactly what they do. But, of course, there was altitude separation. It wasn't dangerous. But it just shows you what the setup is.
Let me. This is new reporting, and this may have come after the NTSB news conference, but bear with me here, Alan, because Washington Post just cleared this story. They say air traffic controllers twice alerted the crew of a U.S. Army helicopter to the presence of an inbound American Airlines jet, with the first warning issued 2 minutes before the aircraft collided Wednesday night, radio transmissions show. How could that be 2 minutes? That's incredible, isn't it? Now, I've raised the question, like, have we ruled out this possibly being a suicide mission?
Well, that's something they'll certainly look at. I wouldn't rule it out, because they're going to look at, was it, you know, a combat mission? Was somebody trying to destroy it? Was there a bomb on board? They're going to go through all of that. But my assumption is, with some of this data, is that the helicopter was given that information, and they looked out and they saw an airplane, but it might have been the airplane behind this airplane. Yeah. And so you've got to know the sequence. You've got to know who's the closest, who are they really talking about. And if you make an assumption of the wrong airplane, well, that can be devastating,
and I think
that may be the answer.
Yeah, I think it might be the answer. So the story also says this, along those lines. They were looking at the radio transmissions. The quality is kind of hard to hear the audio recordings, but they say that, this is the Washington Post, aviation experts who reviewed the communications said that a member of the Black Hawk helicopter crew responded each time from the tower by saying that he could see the plane and requested visual separation, meaning the copter crew would maintain a safe distance each time the request was approved. Well, there's really only two answers then. Either it was a suicide mission or they were focused on another plane.
And I would say B.
Yeah,
I would say they were focused on another airplane. They didn't see the one that was close, and it was just a huge mistake.
Should there ever be, I mean, they've now suspended helicopters around that airport. Shouldn't that be maybe permanent, or are there too many training exercises to go out of that area?
Well, they were talking about that on the news also, and, you know, my assumption would be, yes, they should suspend those airplanes. You know, when you think about all these airports around the country, you can't fly within 2 miles of LaGuardia. You can't fly within 2 miles of the Atlanta airport or Los Angeles. Why in the world can you fly that close to Ronald Reagan? So they're making a huge mistake there by allowing helicopters to fly through there for training. Now, if it's a security issue, if it's an emergency issue, if there's been a capital something going on and they've got to scramble up there and take care of it, then that would be different. But to have helicopters flying at 200 feet low level down the river, that's probably going to change. And I would say that would be the fix. The commercial airplanes have to have their radius. They're big, they're flaps and gear down, they're limited in maneuverability.
Right.
So you've got to move the helicopters. And a lot of people don't realize that helicopter, if he'd have seen a collision, he could have diverted or he could have just stopped. You know, they can hover. So they could have held him up and said, okay, hold your position, let the commercial airplane go by, okay, continue. So there were a lot of options that just weren't used.
Well, I hope we get some answers. Lieutenant Colonel Alan Bullitt Campbell, who has written a book about his life as a pilot, My Life Above the Clouds. Lieutenant Campbell, thank you so much. This was extremely helpful. We really appreciate the perspective this afternoon.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Take care. That's interesting. That I'm glad that I opened up the iPad there, because, and some of that, by the way, may have come from that news conference, and we aired some of the audio, but I was on the air. I didn't hear, you know, the entire thing. But
the night goggles is...
doesn't make any sense.
I don't.
Right? I heard someone address that yesterday, because that area is so lit up. Have you ever had night vision goggles on?
Just, I've seen pictures of how it looks when you're looking through them, and all you could, he's right, it's all lit up through there.
If you have night vision goggles on with all the lights around you, it would be more distracting. Right. So that is a big question mark. We'll see if we get some answers to that. We'll take a break. 5:25. We're coming back with more. I have some really interesting audio from Kansas and our whistleblower, Jamie Reed, WashU and Children's Hospital, on the, you know, gender-affirming care issue coming up.
Get more at 971talk.com.